Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I welcome you to this Wednesday edition of the Bible Study Podcast, where we will talk about the New Testament texts assigned for the 18th Sunday after Pentecost. Sunday's episode, we talked about the Old Testament texts from the book of Jeremiah and from Psalm 54. Hope you're having a good week so far. We are smack in the middle. If you work a traditional Monday through Friday, then congrats, you're halfway there. Otherwise, I don't know where you are in the middle in your week, but regardless, I hope that your week is going well. I hope that you have found time at some point for Sabbath, regardless of your work schedule. And I hope that, yeah, you have found time for not only Sabbath, but prayer and relationship with God. And maybe this podcast will be a little bit of that for you. At any rate, we will go ahead and get started with our first reading. It comes to us from the book of James. We're still working through the book of James right now in this New Testament lesson. Today's reading comes from James chapter 3, verse 13 through chapter 4, verse 3, and chapter 4, verses 7 through 8a. And those verses are as follows. Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambitions in your heart, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something, and you do not have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something, and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. You do not have, because you do not ask. You ask, and you do not receive, because you ask wrongly, in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Again, that is James chapter 3, verse 13 through chapter 4, verse 3, as well as chapter 4, verses 7 through 8a. And I wonder what was going on in this community that is being written to in this book of James, because it seems that there's some pretty heavy interpersonal conflicts happening just from what we've been reading in these epistles, right? There's a lot of here's what you need to do to get along, and you know, don't use your tongue to curse your neighbors while simultaneously blessing and praising God. There's just been a lot, and I feel like I really wish I knew more of the context of this. You know, we don't have a letter that was written to the author of James saying, "Dear James," or, you know, whomever, X, Y, and Z has been happening. Could you please reply? And then you get this letter that addresses all of their concerns. If we had that, same thing for the letters of Paul. It would be great if we had the original correspondence from the churches to Paul, but we do not have those, so we often have to speculate from what is being written in these responses, or in these, sometimes they're responses, sometimes They are just letters of encouragement. But this clearly seems to be in response to, if not a letter, then a definite situation that is going on in this church or in this community. And I don't know, it seems like they are having a pretty rough go of life in community here, and there's a lot of things that need to be addressed. So our commentary once again comes to us from Margaret Amer, the First Presbyterian Church, Shreveport D. Thomason Professor of New Testament, Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary in Austin, Texas. And Margaret says, today's lection continues the discussion of teaching and wisdom that James begins in 3:1 and which ends in 4:12. So we are continuing what we were talking about last week on Wednesday. She says the entire section focuses on how people in the community of faith interact with each other. Last week's portion of this section focused specifically on speech. In today's lection, James turns toward the contrast between wise leadership and the behavior that can tear a faith community apart. Mm-hmm. We definitely are seeing that there's a lot of stuff going on here. However, today's lection oddly omits James's explanation of this contrast, his assertion that friendship of the world constitutes enmity with God, which is 4:4. We stopped at 4:3, if you remember. This contrast between the world and God underscores much of James, especially in this passage. So again, like I said on Sunday's episode, if you do want to take some time to go and read chapter 4, verse 4, 5, and 6, you are free to do that, or you can do that after the podcast. But, you know, if you want to hit pause and go do that, that's cool. But she says that the first iteration of James's contrast between the world and God occurs in James 3, 13 through 18. On its own, this portion of what we read today may be understood as a meditation on the contrast between godly and worldly leadership. The attributes of a godly leader are laid out in 3:13, evidence of works born out of good conduct that are done in the gentleness of wisdom. The description of the leader as wise and understanding echoes the description of the leaders of the tribes of Israel who would take over from Moses, excuse me. Since the works of such a leader are to be done in the gentleness of wisdom, James proceeds to describe the qualities of this heavenly wisdom, or wisdom from above. The wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, reasonable, obedient, full of mercy and of good fruits, impartial, sincere. In short, according to James, godly leaders make peace. We may hear in these words, Jesus is teaching that those who make peace, or the peacemakers, are called the children of God, even as both God and Christ make peace. Moreover, as part of their work, these godly leaders plant a fruit of, give me a second, Greek, dikaiosyne, I'm really sorry, a word translated as either justice or righteousness. And let me just apologize to my Greek professors in seminary. You taught me better than that. Sorry. In Proverbs, this fruit of justice or righteousness grows into the tree of life. Thus, godly leaders, led by heavenly wisdom, restore even the heart of creation itself. James here invites meditation on godly leadership. How do we then, as Christians, through prayer and attention to the will of God, exercise such leadership? How do we encourage such attributes in our leaders and future leaders? She goes on to say that although this reading doesn't specify, it's clear that this community wants something that it lacks, right? That there was that whole section there in the end. It desires something that it does not have, and this leads to conflict. James then begins to diagnose the problem. First, he says, you don't have because you don't ask. And then, as if to respond to rebuttal, he explains, you ask, but you do not receive because you ask for things wickedly. However, what we read in the set lectionary ends just before James' diagnosis reaches its climax in 4:4. Friendship of the world is enmity of God. At the heart of this communal jealousy, resentment, rebellion, and conflict, James sees a desire to befriend the world, read as the world outside of the community, possibly the pagan Gentile world in which his communities are dispersed. Understood in this way, James invites a reflection on worldliness and godliness. Most of the time, Christians live both in the world and in the community of faith. This lection asks us to consider where our loyalties lie and how we know. Here, musings on symbols of status and prestige, whether the latest smart device or footwear, might be apropos. So also might discussions about prayer, how and why we pray, and what we pray for. And we actually talked a little bit about some of that in Sunday's episode. So James ends this passage with a series of recommendations for those caught up in worldly wisdom rather than godly wisdom. And these begin where our section of reading ends. Therefore, be subject to God, but resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. Yeah, and that's a lovely, draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. Be subject to God. So it's basically saying, you know, pay attention to what your motives are. Are you motivated by God's will for your life? Are you motivated by God's word, God's love for you? Are you motivated by the advertising campaigns that tell us that we never have enough, that we'll never be good enough, all of those things? The world is not... Some people read passages like this as saying that we should reject all things worldly. And I don't know that we need to go to extremes like that, but we do need to understand our motivations. Why do we do things? Why do we want things? What are our motivations for a lot of things in life? Are they because of our relationship with God, or are they because of our relationship with the world? And that is where we are going to leave it and go to commercial, because I like to leave you thinking about stuff. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Want to know the latest and hottest music hitting the airwaves? Don't be left out. Listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Music Podcast. Keith keeps you on the loop with everything you need to know from pop, rock, hip-hop, and the top 40. And we'll throw in news of your favorite artists, concert and tour dates, and so much more. Listen no further, because this is the gold standard in music podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We were just talking about the lectionary text from James, chapters 3 and 4, and we will now move on to the gospel reading for this week. The gospel is still coming to us from the Gospel of Mark. This time it comes to us from chapter 9, verses 30 through 37, and those verses are as follows. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him, and 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying, and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be the first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it into his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." Again, that is Mark chapter 9, verses 30 through 37. And as a reminder, we talked a little bit last week about how we have now passed the midway point of the Gospel of Mark. So there's been a shift in the way Mark is telling this story. There's been a shift from Jesus's ministry, his teaching and healing and traveling around, doing, you know, those things, teaching and healing and eating with people and meeting with people, to now kind of turning his face toward Jerusalem, and he's trying to prepare his disciples. So you remember last week he asked them, "Who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am?" And then he started to tell them how, what meaning being the Messiah actually meant, and Peter rebuked him. He's continuing this. So we jump in like we're like, you know, they went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it. Okay, if you didn't know what we were reading about, who's he? Where's there? What are they doing? Right? Who's they? So they, the disciples and Jesus, went on from there where they were last week, which Caesarea Philippi, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. They're passing through Galilee. Jesus didn't want anyone to know what they're doing. Because he's teaching his disciples, he's trying to tell them what is going on. And if you think about it, and the crowds that have been following him for the entirety of his public ministry, it's obvious why he doesn't want to try to deal with the crowds in addition to trying to tell his disciples what is going to happen to him as the Messiah. Now, when I think about this text, I was thinking, it's, you know, there's some questions in this text, and one of my least favorite questions in the world is, do you have any questions? Which sounds kind of funny. It's fine when I'm expecting it. For instance, if I'm in an interview, I know they're going to say, now what questions do you have? And I try to come prepared. It's when it's thrown at me and I'm not prepared that the internal processing part of my brain just takes that question and freezes. My mind goes horribly blank, and it can make me look like a total dork, frankly. And as I said, part of this is because I'm an internal processor. You know, give me 20 minutes, give me an hour or a day. Hey, give me 6 months and I will have some questions for you like you will not believe. I will have processed that conversation and I'll have come up with a whole slew of questions. But of course, 20 minutes, even 20 minutes is too late in most situations. Part of it sometimes is that I don't want to come across as ignorant or unprepared. Again, going back to my wanting to do things right problem. I always feared asking questions in college or seminary for just that reason, appearing ignorant or unprepared, which, you know, supposedly there's no such thing as a stupid question, but I've definitely been in situations where I've been made to feel like mine was the dumbest question in the universe. And oh my gosh, everyone knows the answer to that. Why are you asking it? Maybe you've had the same or at least a similar experience. You know, you're in a situation, you're listening intently, but you're still not quite getting what the speaker is trying to tell you. So you ask a clarifying question, right? That's what you're supposed to do. And you're met, rather than with a clarifying answer, you're met with a huge sigh of exasperation, maybe an eye roll, and a look of pure revulsion that clearly says the person of whom you ask the question wishes nothing more than to be done with the conversation so they don't have to be saddled with the moron asking the ridiculous questions. Dramatic, I know, but my friends, I have been that moron. And it makes it harder the next time to work up courage to ask a question, especially if you're, you know, sitting in the same group and having to ask the question of the same person, but even sitting in a completely different group with a different instructor or a different leader, you still don't know how they might respond. So it can be hard for me to summon up my courage. So I hope I haven't been the other person, you know, the one who makes the questioner feel like a moron for posing the question. But I fear, you know, because I'm not perfect in the world and I am human and I go through moods just like everybody else, I do fear that I have held that role at some point in my life, and maybe more than I even want to admit to myself. I apologize to anybody out there in the world who I've made feel dumb for asking a question. Because the fact is that questions are our friends, which makes it sound like I'm talking to elementary students, right? But if no one ever asked a question or looked into something out of curiosity, we would never learn anything. We'd never invent anything. We would never move forward, right? We would just stay where we are, stuck in the status quo. And granted, there are times when questions can start to grate on our nerves. If you've ever spent time with a child who is going through, you know, when they're about four and they go through that phase where everything is why? You understand when questions can suddenly start to grate a little bit, but generally questions need to be asked in order to be answered. Makes me think about what we just read from James, right? You didn't ask the question. How are you going to get an answer? And he then says, you didn't ask the question correctly, which can lead us to a whole, well, there's no such thing as a stupid question, etc. But we're not going to go there right now. In fact, our gospel reading for today might have turned out differently had the disciples simply asked Jesus a few or even a lot of questions. At this point in Mark's account, Jesus has taken the disciples aside, as we said, to teach them about his upcoming suffering, death, and resurrection. And they don't understand what Jesus is telling them, which I totally get, because they had a specific vision for an expectation for what the Messiah would be and do. And what he's telling them does not fit that vision whatsoever. And so this might be the second time that Jesus is trying to explain all of this to them. And we might want to say, why aren't you listening? Pay attention. He already said this. But again, what he's telling them is so much the opposite of what they are expecting him to be as the Messiah that they definitely needed more time to process it. You know, at this point, they are definitely internal processors and they're trying to figure everything out. After all, absolutely no one expected that the promised Messiah would redeem Israel through suffering, right? They're looking for might and power. What's harder to overlook, though, is that they don't ask any questions to try to clarify their confusion. And maybe they've had those experiences where asking questions made them feel like a giant moron, or maybe they had just seen Jesus chastise Peter, right? Get behind me, Satan. And they're like, yeah, I'm not going there. I'm not opening myself up to that. No, thank you. Maybe now they're afraid to ask questions. The truth is, though, that no matter what our past experiences, questions are not the mark of a lack of intelligence. They're the mark of a curious mind. And we do need to take our second break of the podcast. So stay tuned, and when we come back, we'll talk more about this reading from the Gospel of Mark.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. We are talking about questions. We are asking questions about questions? I don't know. We're talking about the Gospel of Mark and why the disciples did not ask Jesus clarifying questions when they were clearly confused and upset by what he had been telling them. But they don't. They don't ask Jesus any questions. Instead, they get into an argument amongst themselves as they're traveling along about who is the greatest. And you might be thinking, what? How did that come up? But I think it might actually stem from their fear of asking those questions. No one wanted to be the one to ask or possibly look uninformed or ignorant or put themselves out there and get chastised. So now they take a different tack and try to go about proving who among them is the greatest. Who is the one who is the least misinformed or silly or lacking in understanding? Who is the least moronic among them? Maybe that, you know, maybe it's not the greatest, but who is the least moronic among them? Maybe if they can just prove themselves as the greatest, it won't matter so much that they don't have a clue what Jesus is talking about and are too afraid to ask. And I know it's not a terribly helpful argument, but from a human nature perspective, it is understandable. And of course, they already completely missed Jesus's point about, you know, the first being the last and taking up their cross and doing all those things. They've completely missed that point, and they're now arguing over who is the greatest. They're going in the exact opposite direction of where Jesus was trying to lead them by telling them what it meant to be the Messiah, what it meant to be disciples and followers of the Messiah. So when they reach their destination, Jesus asks them what they were arguing about on the way. And they're like, nothing, just talking amongst ourselves. They're reluctant to tell him, but they do finally admit that they had been arguing about who is the greatest among them. And so Jesus brings a child into their midst. And you know, in cartoons where the character just reaches out of the frame and whoosh, brings in, like, this is how I picture that. Like, I don't know the setting that they're in. They just arrived at Capernaum, so maybe there's a crowd of people, you know, like, I don't think that's the way it happened, but I'm just picturing Jesus being like, child, here. Anyway, however Jesus does it, and I'm sure it was much more gentle and polite than that, but Jesus brings a child into their midst and tells the disciples that they must become like that child in order to enter into the kingdom of heaven. And this may have confused the disciples even more, but a child is the ultimate symbol of our not knowing, our not understanding. A child is a symbol of being immature and undeveloped, maybe naive. And those aren't bad things. Jesus says it's not our greatness and our amazing deeds that are going to get us into the kingdom of heaven. Because remember, nothing we do can earn God's love. What it is that's going to get us into the kingdom of heaven is our relationships, especially our relationship to God through the Messiah. So perhaps if the disciples had asked the questions they were too afraid to utter earlier, they would have had a much different conversation with Jesus. Maybe they would have gained a different insight into what he was saying. Perhaps if they'd asked, they would have understood more quickly and easily that greatness does not lie in power, but in compassion. And it's not achieved by status. It's not achieved by who's the greatest or who has the most or who spends the most. It's achieved by service. Clarifying questions can help us strengthen relationships. And our relationship with God is no different. Sometimes I think we worry about going to God with too many questions because we don't want to seem as though we lack faith, right? We don't want to seem like Doubting Thomas. We don't want to seem as though we don't trust or believe. At some point, many of us were taught that questions are a sign of doubt and that doubt is the opposite of faith. But first off, questions are more often a mark of curiosity than they are of doubt. And second, doubt isn't the opposite of faith. It can actually grow stronger. Faith can actually grow stronger in the face of doubts and challenges. Without doubt, we can speak of knowledge, but given that faith is belief in things not seen, doubt seems to be an essential ingredient. And when you think about it, not only did no one anticipate Jesus' death on the cross, but his resurrection was even more shocking and amazing and incredible and all of those words. In none of the Gospels does any person react to Jesus' resurrection with a phrase like, "Yep, I knew it. It was just what I suspected. You know, Jesus said so. Jesus told us, so I knew this was going to happen. Totally. Yep." No, they all are still like, "Whoa, dude. What? What the resurrection is most often met with is doubt or confusion. A lot of people who see Jesus don't recognize him until something specific happens, or they're confused. Because Jesus's life, death, and resurrection are so not what we logically think should happen. They're so world-changing that if you don't have doubt, you might not actually be paying close enough attention. If God's kingdom, as Jesus tells us about it, is so different from what we are used to in the day-to-day lives of our own kingdom, then we are going to be understandably confused, and we should therefore ask questions. if Jesus' death seems hard to understand and his resurrection even more so, we should ask questions. If we can't figure out what God is up to because we, in fact, are not God, yeah, true story, then we should ask questions. So my invitation for you to this week is simple. Give your questions to God. You know, sometimes I leave you with a, oh, maybe try this. Maybe, no, this is simple. Give your questions to God. Don't be afraid that you might look silly or be the only one who doesn't know the answer. This is God we're talking about. A divine being of love. Just as we give God our time, our talents, our money, our service, etc., so we should also gratefully give God our questions and our challenges and our doubts. They might not be answered right away. They might not be answered in the way we're hoping. And the answers might just lead us to more and bigger questions. But more questions will lead to more communication, right? More communication with God, which can only lead to a stronger relationship. We don't need to fear our questions or our misunderstandings or our confusions or our curiosity. We simply need to put our trust and our doubts both into God's hands. The perfect love of God is said to cast out all fear. So my hope for you this week is that you can give your questions to God without fear, and that those questions will strengthen your faith and your relationships, not only with God, but your relationships with others, with the people in your life. Ask those clarifying questions. Act out of curiosity. Find out more. Don't be afraid of being the only one not knowing, because chances are really good there's somebody else in the crowd who has the same question. And if someone mocks you for asking a question, just try to ignore it. Ask your questions. Thank you so much for listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast. Join me again on Sunday when we will be looking at the 19th Sunday after Pentecost, readings from the Old Testament and the Psalm. So thank you again for joining me. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And please remember that you are a beautiful and beloved and questioning child of God. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.